Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, August 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen in Schenectady on Troy, New York. Anissa is an entrepreneur, a media star. Oh, yeah, she can cook, too. If you have a question about Moroccan cuisine and cooking methods and spice, we always talk about spice when Anissa is on the program. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Anissa Waheed, Moroccan dishes, your calls coming up on Food Friday, which begins right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's a Food Friday, and today we welcome back Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen. After spending 14 years in Manhattan, Anissa returned to Schenectady. In 2008, she and her husband opened a Moroccan and Indian boutique named Tara. Then in 2011, Tara Kitchen opened its doors at 431 Liberty Street. She also operates a location now in Troy. Anissa has been featured on two national TV shows, Beat Bobby Flay and Guy's Grocery Games with Guy Fieri. If you have a question about Moroccan cuisine, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Anissa Waheed, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, Ray.
You know, every time I turn the TV on or open the newspaper or listen to the radio, there's Anissa Waheed. Is it painful to be that famous?
Embarrassing, not painful. I love it. Other than that, it's embarrassing.
It's not embarrassing. I saw you on TV today. It was great. It was, you know, we have it on in the newsroom, and I said, "Well, there's my guest. She's on again today." It's terrific. How have things gone? I know it's got to be tough, and has to have been tough for all those who own restaurants to keep things going during the lockdown. How has it been at Tara?
Oh, I feel like these past 5 months, I've actually lived five lifetimes.
Yeah.
It's every day has just been so challenging, and the unknown of what's going to happen tomorrow, the scare of the disease itself. It's all of it has been very, very difficult emotionally and mentally, but. Having said that, we're doing really well. Both locations remained open through it all. You know, we're not necessarily thriving, but we're hanging on. And, the staff is all working. So all in all, really good. Amazing support from the customers. So, we're hanging in there.
You know, when you finally opened the doors again, to in-person dining, it must there must have been a line outside three blocks.
Well, of course, a lot of people were very anxious to come back and dine. But what was so interesting to me was the first interaction that we had with the customers. It was so different for them and for us. It was almost like we all forgot what it's like to do this. Right.
Yeah.
That was very, very interesting to me, because obviously none of us trained in how to behave during a pandemic before. So, but people have been coming out supporting us, and it's been really, really great.
One of the things that I know about you from your appearances here, and of course your appearances everywhere, is that you are a driven person and you are a really sharp business person. And I would imagine that this 6 or 7 month setback has slowed down the Anissa train a little bit.
Not necessarily. As a small business owner and someone who is kind of constantly trying to survive in the restaurant business, the way I looked at the whole pandemic was you know, it's definitely a step back, but it doesn't have to be something that is an end all be all. So we definitely pivoted our business immediately. Like, you know, I think the third week of March when we saw the writing on the wall, you know, kind of regrouped with the team at the restaurant. And we said, okay, what do we need to do to A, make sure we survive and we get to the other side? And B, extremely important to me was, what do we make sure to continue with all the growth, momentum, and planning that we've had in place for the next year or 2 years? Because as you know, I like to do that. I like to plan a year, 2 years, 5 years ahead. So what do you do when something like this happens and in all intents and purposes, the world comes to a standstill? So that was right at the top of my mind back in March. And, you know, we definitely are still doing everything that we planned on doing for the year of 2020, as in Gilderland is still on track and we're still going to open our Gilderland location this year. So there are setbacks, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to, you know, slow down.
You know, I'm not a great business person, but one of the traits that you see in great business people is that they turn setbacks into advantages. And I'm wondering if there were some advantages here to not having in-person dining.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I absolutely loved about this past 5 months was I have really grown as a person who loves to, as a chef, as a cook, as a business person. Like, these past 5 months really forced me to acutely focus on things that really matter, right? And in some ways, the fact that we didn't have dine-in and the fact that we have to only focus on one type of a customer, which is a takeout, like, all of that laser focus left me a lot of time to really then have laser focus in areas where I could and can improve. So my cooking skills, my business skills, I'm not necessarily sure how my parenting skills have improved in the past 5 months, but everything else seems to have really sharpened up.
You know, that's so funny. You know, I have kids too, and I know you have kids. It's been a bit of a struggle, hasn't it?
Yes, yes, yes. I think the biggest struggle has been, I have toddlers, a 7 and an 8-year-old, and for them, the biggest struggle has been not having the human interaction, not having friends to play with, and not being, you know, I mean, I see them kind of lovingly look across the street at, you know, other kids.
Yeah.
And it's been, that was really hard in the beginning. And of course, as the regulations sort of relaxed a bit, you know, seeing their cousins and stuff, that made a big difference. But that's very, very challenging. If I think anything about this pandemic, not so much the business end, I think the kids have been the most challenging for me.
Anisa Waheed of Tara Kitchen is our guest. Well, you've laid down the gauntlet. You said you've improved your cooking skills, which I find hard to believe because they're pretty darn good to begin with. But we'll find out what you've been working on. We'll take a quick break here. We'll also hit the phones. If you have a question about Moroccan cuisine, Anisa Waheed is here from Tara Kitchen. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop. It's a Food Friday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Anisa Waheed of Tara Kitchen is with us today. And before the break, we talked about life during lockdown and this pandemic and how it has changed many things, especially in the restaurant world. And you said you have been focusing on many things, among them your cooking skills. And I find that extremely hard to believe because every time you have brought food in here, it has been incredible. What have you been working on, Anisa Waheed?
I have to say, Ray, I'm really missing not being in the studio with you and having food for you.
Agreed.
So I just want to put that out there. But, you know, something we started right when the shutdown happened was doing these nightly specials to try and, you know, the fact that we couldn't get out and travel and do all that stuff, I started to do a lot of international food at the restaurant. And that's been a lot of fun to kind of, quote unquote, travel to Cuba or like right now we're doing Indonesia and China and India and France and, of course, Spain. So that's been really fun to kind of explore all these cuisines at the restaurant, which in the past I haven't really had a chance to do. We're always so busy with what we are doing that this was a fun way to kind of explore and, you know, cook different things.
Well, give me an example. Let's talk Cuban cuisine for a minute or Indonesian. What would you do at Tara to bring that influence in?
Yeah, so we're doing the bak mi goreng right now, which is a noodle dish, and it's got egg noodles. It has different kinds of vegetables like cabbage and carrots and broccoli and some chicken and sweet sour flavors, that kind of stuff. So that's what we're doing. So it's like a one dish thing that we're doing with the Indonesian food. With Cuban, I did it ropevejeja. I did it with lamb instead of beef. So, you know, cooking lamb into a stew and then rice and beans and black beans, that kind of stuff. So kind of just a little snapshot of what what people are eating in these countries. And what's been really interesting for me is to see all the similarities in all these different cooking styles and ingredient lists. And we've talked about this at great length. Yeah, I've always felt that at the end of the day, we're all just eating ingredients in every part of the world, right? It's just, how do we put it together? And of course, I've traveled extensively and I've had food from so many different parts of the world. And I always felt that. So bringing that kind of back home to Schenectady, and I was picking recipes that I could somehow relate to what I was doing in the restaurant. So for example, like stews, more sort of stew-based cooking. So, you know, just kind of then trying to circle back to what I do at the restaurant regularly, which are the tagines. And it's been very successful. People have really loved it. And it's, we've had dialogues about it on social media and conversations in the restaurant about it. So in some way, it's also been a way for me to remain sane through all of this. You know, if you're focusing on learning a new technique or a new recipe or a new ingredient, then I'm not focusing on how the world might be falling apart.
Anissa Waheed is our guest from Tara Kitchen, and we'll get to the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. You mentioned social media, though, and I just have to ask you, candidly, you know, because it is such an interactional thing, does it ever get to the point where, you know, a customer will harp on a particular thing and you just want to say, well, shut up already. I get your point. No?
Not too often, but, you know, I really, really enjoy the dialogue that I have with the people on, you know, the main page for Tara Kitchen is the page that I personally run and operate and post on. And then we have a few other pages that are not operated by me, but I have, a great personal relationship and dialogue with the customers on that. And it gives me really good feedback and the bad feedback, all of it. You just have to take it in stride. And I love when people ask questions and stuff because I want that. I want people to explore and, ask me things, and it helps me grow too.
All right. So no occupational hazards at all on social media for you then?
I mean, you know, sometimes you have that stuff, and if that happens, you just ban them, right? The end. But it's extremely rare, extremely rare. I think in the 10 years, I might have done that once.
Well, fair enough. Anissa Waheed is our guest of Tara Kitchen. We have an email here from Emily. And Emily writes, I love seasonal fish summer dishes like lobster rolls. Are there summer seasonal dishes like that in Morocco? Summer seasonal.
Not so much like summer seasonal that I can think of, but, you know, every region of Morocco does like very, very different, unique kind of food. So a lot of the seafood stuff you're going to find in Casablanca or even down, further down south in Essaouira, where it's right on the, you know, on the beach. There's a tiny little village called Essaouira, where you can get great seafood. But I have to say, I haven't really had a lobster roll in Morocco.
No.
That might be a Maine thing.
Have you had them in Maine? Have you been up there?
I have, actually. There was a college up there that I visited when I was in high school. So I have actually been to Maine.
We just got back. My family and I were there for the week last week. And, oh, the lobster. I mean, it's just...
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I bet.
The number here.
We might have to think about that.
Well, you know what? Maybe we'll take all our families up and we'll go and we'll cause some real trouble up there, right?
That would be awesome.
The number here is 800-348-2551 on this Food Friday. Anissa Wahid of Tara Kitchen is here. Roberta is in the Berkshires. Roberta, you're on.
Oh, hi there. I lovely listening to your show. I'm a first-time caller.
Oh, thanks.
My question to... when cooking Moroccan food, it's quite often requested, it says to use a tagine. If you don't have one, what else is preferable to use to acquire the same flavor, the texture, the richness of Moroccan food?
Yeah, you know, that's a question we get quite often. A nice heavy bottom pot with a nice heavy bottom lid, I mean, not a bottom, but a heavy lid is kind of what you really need. The idea of cooking in a tagine with that conical-shaped dome lid is you're trying to keep all your moisture in the pot. And, you know, so it doesn't, that's what is kind of steaming and cooking and keeping the food so moist and all that kind of stuff. And also the idea of slow cooking. So, you know, slow cooking something in a pot that can retain heat and the moisture is really all you really need. I think at the end of the day, your ingredients and your seasoning and your spices will get you to that rich flavor that you're looking for.
I appreciate your answer. Thank you. That will help me out a lot.
Roberta, thank you
very
much.
Good luck.
Anissa Wahid, our guest today from Tara Kitchen. The Troy location is going well?
Yeah, Troy is doing well. We're celebrating. We just had our 30-year anniversary there, but we all forgot about it because it was right during COVID.
So I'm sorry. It's been 3 years? Wow.
I know. 3 years.
Time flies.
Yes.
And now you said you have a Gilderland location opening as well.
Yeah, so Gilderland we had been working on since last October, and we were really hoping to get it going by spring, but there were a few issues that we were trying to solve even before COVID. And then, of course, by the time we solved those issues, COVID hit. So
yeah,
that set us back. But hopefully we get back on track within the next couple of weeks, and I'm projecting a November opening.
Anissa Wahid, our guest today. The number on Food Friday is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpopwamc.org. Bill from Scotia wrote in, harissa was in the New York Times crossword puzzle today, clued by spicy North African condiment. Please tell us about harissa and also Ras El Hanout, and that is from Bill in Scotia.
So Ras El Hanout is a seasoning blend. It's made up of many different spices. And in Arabic, the term Ras El Hanout means the head of or the top of a spice shop. So the owner of a spice shop might have his own secret blend that he kind of puts together. And then you can go either purchase spices individually or get his blend for various different things. So in essence, you know, Ras El Hanout is a combination of different spices that's specially picked and prepared by the owner of the spice shop. And harissa is very, very popular in Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco. It's, I believe, an origin Algerian. And it's red chili peppers, garlic, cumin, a little bit of oil, and, you know, blend it up together to make a hot, spicy paste. which is used as a condiment in cooking.
Hmm. Let's talk about your secret spice recipe. And you have a signature taste almost in so many of your dishes. And there's that secret special little blend. You don't have to give away all your trade secrets, but tell us a little about it.
In the harissa or the ras al hanout?
In everything that you bring, you have a certain palette of spices that you use. And let's talk about those a little bit.
So, I mean, everything that I cook with at the restaurant, I start with ras al hanout, which is, and it's a ras al hanout that we blend in the restaurant for ourselves. It's my recipe. And it has paprika, it has cumin, cinnamon, cardamom, all of these nice, beautiful, warm spices. It has dried ginger in it, some fenugreek leaves. And so that's basically the start of all of my seasoning and spicing. And then from there, you know, we start adding many, many layers. So the way I like to cook and the way I like to also eat is I want everything flavored and seasoned perfectly. And I'm not necessarily talking about spicy, because I think a lot of people mistake that for, oh, if it's not spicy, it's not good. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, making sure your salt is right and your seasoning level is right in every bite and every layer. And I pay an extreme amount of attention to that. So I think that's what probably comes through in the food is everything is, there are many layers of seasonings and spices that go into all the ingredients, and then it comes together as one dish.
Your ras al hanout is something that you have developed. When you prepare that, is this artistry or is this strict chemistry and mathematics? In other words, are you strictly following a recipe that precisely to the quarter teaspoon, or are you in fact just saying, I'll throw a little of this in, I'll throw a little of that in?
Well, to come to the recipe that I have for my ras al hanout, it took me a few years.
Right.
So I had kind of been playing around with, you know, putting my own ras al hanout to, and the reason I wanted to put my own ras al hanout together was I wanted a seasoning blend that I could use at home, at work, where it could just be like this one spice fits all kind of jar, right? Instead of having a cupboard full of spices. So it took me a little while. And while I was working on that recipe, it was definitely, you know, a lot of artistry, I would say. But in order for it to be precise and have the exact same flavor profile every single time, it has to be mathematical. And at the end of the day, I think there's a lot of math and science that happens in food in order for it to be such a beautiful art, if that makes sense.
No, it makes
great.
I think
a lot of what we do in food, although it's definitely a skill set, it's art, and for me, it's definitely been the best art form that I've ever worked in. And I view it as such, but there is a tremendous amount of math and science that's happening behind the scenes.
You know, it's so funny. In music, you are an artist and you work at your art. And then at some point, if you're lucky, you get very popular and then it becomes a commercial entity. Well, with what you have done, this artistry that you speak of. And now your spices and some of your, like your lemon, you can find it in the stores. And so how do you then go from artist to mass marketer?
You have to be very careful about that. And that's what I'm talking about. That's where the science comes in, because there is a lot of science that supports the art that you want to do in food. So, you know, the recipes, the way they're written and the way that are produced in order for them to be filled into a jar, and then the shelf life that it needs to sit on. And you're constantly thinking, you know, if you want to get a product on the shelf, at least for me, I am constantly thinking of what happens when the consumer opens that top in their home. What is their experience going to be like when they open it? What is the smell? What is the texture? What is the taste? And if I lose something in that jar that I, you know, that I cannot replicate in person at the restaurant or in some way that I am cooking, then I don't want it in the jar, if that makes sense. So I'm not going to put a product out on the shelf that's going to be a 50% of what I would do either in my restaurant or in my home. So it takes a lot of time, energy, science in creating recipes that can go on the shelf and still bring that, you know, just made, fresh, homemade, small batch feeling to the consumer. And we work extremely hard at that.
Yeah, I think that's quite a trick indeed. Anisa Waheed is our guest from Tara Kitchen. We'll take a quick break here on this Food Friday. 800-348-2551. If you have a question, 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Pop Food Friday, Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Anisa Waheed of Tara Kitchen. Always fun to talk to Anisa now that she's a huge star on TV all the time, in the newspapers. It's true. All right, let's go to Lynn in Hyde Park. Lynn, you're on.
Hi. When I traveled in Morocco, we had a fruit tangine that was absolutely spectacular. And I'm wondering what the liquid is you use in it, and do you use dried fruit or fresh fruit?
Do you remember what kind of fruits they were?
It was quite a variety, and it looked just beautiful because they had them all sectioned in this very big tangine.
I don't remember that I've ever had that, but I know we do cook a tremendous amount with fruits at the restaurant, and of course also in Moroccan cuisine. And it's a combination of both. We use fresh fruit as well as dried fruit. So most of the times, the liquids that we're using in our food is actually just water, or if it's something, if we're cooking with chicken, then we might use the chicken stock that comes right out of the chicken. But we're not, at least for me personally, we don't use any other liquids other than what comes from the ingredients that we're cooking with.
Oh, that sounds easy enough. I mean, so it would just be a little water and the different combinations of fruit in a tangine.
I'm just talking from my own experience, but possibly honey is another ingredient that's used a lot. Molasses. It could be some sort of fruit juice, orange juice, maybe that was used. I personally have never had a fruit tangine, but you just gave me a new idea, so I might have to try that.
There you go.
Beautiful to look at, too, I have to say. It was really spectacular.
Yeah,
so thank you.
Very true for Moroccan food and presentation. You know, any time that I've had you eat food in Morocco, the presentation is just beautiful.
Thanks for the call, Lynn. Well, that's difficult to maintain presentation that is perhaps as artful as you would find in Morocco on a mass scale where you're feeding 50, 100 people a night, right?
Well, we cook every single tagine individually, so there's nothing mass-produced about the food that we do.
I misspoke. I don't mean mass-produced, but you're feeding the masses. Isn't it more difficult then to keep that level of artistry high?
I don't think so, because I still feel that, you know, every tagine that we put together in the restaurant, we're so focused on that one dish and how that's going in and, you know, how we prep it and how we send it out. So in some ways, actually, it's easier for us to maintain the presentation and the look, feel, control the taste and that stuff because we're cooking in individual tagines. Mm. And then the tagines go out to the table, so there's no transfer, there's no heat loss from the stove to a plate to, you know, a bus station or a waitress station. It's literally stovetop to table. So I think, you know, there's a lot, we probably have it easier than some other places where you might have to go through a few different steps before the food hits the table.
Anisa Wahid of Tara Kitchen is our guest on this Food Friday. The number is 800-348-2551. Jerry is in Troy. Jerry, you're on.
Oh, hi. Yeah, can you hear me?
Sure thing.
Yes.
Oh, good. Yes, hi. And I wanted to tell you, I have eaten at your restaurant in Troy and really have always enjoyed the wonderful dishes that I've had there. And it's lovely, and it's a lovely atmosphere. Also, one of my favorite foods is ethnic foods is Ethiopian, and I wonder if you have any thoughts about doing Ethiopian food since you're branching out into other ethnicities.
I absolutely, absolutely love Ethiopian food, and I actually did do Ethiopian food already. We ran it for three weeks, and we did chicken dorowat, and we did jollof rice, and I did a cabbage, potato, and carrot vegetable dish with that. But, you know, I have to say Ethiopian is one of the most requested foods, so we might bring it back.
Oh, that would be wonderful. How will I know? Just keep checking your menus and just keep checking with you. I
mean, social media, Facebook is probably the best place to get all of our
updated
information.
And that would be in the Troy location? That would be in the Troy location as well?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Okay, I will keep looking for it. And thank you so much. I love that you're here in my city.
Oh, Jerry, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Anisa Wahid is our guest, 800-348-2551. Well, you mentioned bringing international flavors in to what you do and what you have done at Tara Kitchen. And I got thinking during the break, is there a quintessential American thing? Is there something that says, oh, this is American food?
Burger.
Are you doing that?
For me. Oh, yeah. So we just, 2 weeks ago, we launched a new burger called the 50-50, right?
Yeah.
And the idea behind the burger is it's like 50% American, 50% Moroccan. And as my little one would say, it's 100% awesome. So we did create a fantastic new burger that's on the menu. So, yes, I agree. So we're doing a burger, which is just very, very unique and different, but yet very familiar. So I think I love doing food like that. And we're doing a fried chicken sandwich with some quick pickled vegetables. Those are the two things that in my mind I think of, you know, quintessential American food.
And how are they going over?
Very, very well. Very well. The response has been overwhelmingly good, so I'm encouraged by it.
Well, that's good. Anisa Wahid is our guest. If you have a question about Moroccan or really any international cuisine at this point, 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You know, I have to try, and I do have some of your special spice blend. I got to try that. I'm doing a barbecue this weekend. Maybe put that in the burgers.
Yeah,
not a bad idea. This one came in from Jim in Albany. Jim writes, I'm looking at the Tara Kitchen Facebook page. Everything looks so great. I've never had Moroccan food. What do I start with?
I would say you start with chicken preserve lemon, right? That's as basic as, I shouldn't use the word basic, but it's quintessential Moroccan. It gives you... it just is transformative. It transports you. I would say that's where you start, or you start with the lamb honey prune tagine, which is also very, very traditional, flavors of Morocco.
And so delicious. So delicious. All right, the second part of Jim's question, and we've talked about this in your early appearances on this program years ago now. Jim said, after spending so long in New York City, what made you decide to open up in the capital region?
Well, I am from the capital region. So when my family moved from India in 93, we came to the Schenectady area. I've recently been thinking a lot about 2008, 2009 during this pandemic, because in many ways, I feel like all of this is bringing back those memories of that early time, because I feel like we're going back to scratch in so many ways. And so I came back because I wanted to get out of corporate America. I wanted to get out of not having a clear sense of direction and purpose working in an office. And, you know, this was home. And I came back so that I could sort of re-energize, refresh, and think of a game plan. And now, you know, there's really no looking back.
Well, you were in advertising, right?
Print and publishing.
Yeah.
So magazines, and I was on the technology side of that stuff. So working in putting ink on paper. And the last thing I did was really what's called asset management, you know, securing, procuring, locking, and keeping safe digital assets that are part of ownership of the magazine. So that's what I did for American Express in my last career, a part of my career.
You know, I find it very interesting that you say that you've been thinking of 2008, 2009, and how, in a way, you go back to scratch now. And I wonder if you might explain what you mean.
Yeah, okay, I can actually, because, okay, 2008, you know, we had this major financial meltdown, right? And we're going through some of that right now. And in many ways, it's far more devastating because of the global impact. And also, we're seeing a far more devastation happening with small businesses shutting down and people losing jobs, that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think about the connection there. And I remember 2008 kind of feeling and being the same. So from that perspective, in terms of, you know, the economy and what's happening nationally, globally, you know, I get that same feeling of uncertainty and not knowing what's going to happen. And then on the other hand, you know, that 2008 was also the year I decided I was going to quit a fairly well-paying six-figure job in the city with security and life health insurance, and I decided to open a business in upstate New York, you know, in a boutique selling random tchotchkes that really nobody needed, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like that's kind of what I'm doing right now again is, okay, I'm doing food and restaurants, and we're still expanding and growing, and we have plans, you know, we have more plans for next year that are already in the works for another location. And so I, you know, it's scary, but at the same time, do you really step back or do you just keep moving forward? And when the shutdown happened, there was no roadmap on how we were supposed to act or behave. March 15th, nobody told us there would be, you know, support from the government, there would be support from, you know, local agencies, or there would be you know what I mean? There was like nothing we knew on March 15th, but the only strategy was we have to keep going on. The end. For me, there was no other question. And that was the same mindset I had in 2008 when I was quitting my job and moving and, you know, making these massive life-altering changes, and everyone around me was saying, you know, what are you doing and why are you doing these things? I had the single focus was I have to keep going on. Otherwise, you know, I was not going to make it working a 9-to-5 job. So that's why it's really interesting how there's so many parallels to that and this right now, having to relearn how do you get customers back to your restaurant during the pandemic? How do you continue to have sales when maybe people don't want to buy, and maybe when people don't feel safe, whether it's because they don't want to get sick or whether it's because they don't want to spend the money because they might not have job security? And like these are all the same things that we were thinking about in 2008. And that's why I see so many parallels over there. And it's like going back to my roots and, you know, we've started partnering with breweries. It's like, okay, if customers don't feel comfortable coming and dining in, where can we go where they're going to be? And we've created a tremendous amount of partnerships locally, you know, going out and selling our food at these places or creating more awareness about the cooking sauces so people can cook and eat at home. So all of those sort of strategies that we had put in place in 2008 to get that original, you know, 1.0 business going is that's what we're doing in 2.0.
We're joined today by Anisa Waheed of Tara Kitchen. I'm struck by your tale of, in 2008, saying, you know what, enough of the six figures. I am now going to try this thing that I want to do. And that takes a certain person to do that. Do you really enjoy walking a tightrope without a net?
It's not, you know, it's not, of course I take a tremendous amount of risk. It's more than risk. I think what really, really drives me is independence. And at the end of the day, I want to be independent. I want to feel independent. And to me, independence is not tied necessarily to money. So when I left that job and I decided I was going to, you know, move and start a business and be poor, the answer there for me was not that I'm going to make more money in order to have independence. It was more I'm going to have more independence. So I have control over the time and how I spend my time and when I and where I spend my time. So I think, you know, that's the driving force for me, and the fact that I'm not risk averse, I suppose, really works in my favor.
Well, someday you will write that book and it'll be a big seller. Let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Anisa Waheed is our guest. Kent is in Troy. Kent.
Good afternoon. Fascinating show, and lovely to hear that you're here for us. Quick question. My question revolves around the influence of French cuisine on Moroccan and conversely Moroccan on French, and whether or not you think that that they've been influenced by each other.
Oh, 100%. I, you know, of course, the French were in Morocco for a really long time, and one of the biggest areas in Moroccan cuisine where you see the French influence is in their baking. You know, the beautiful breads and pastries and, you know, all of the very delicate sort of confectioneries and cookies. And so you see a tremendous amount of French influence in their baking. I am not a baker, so I don't do that. But it struck me as so interesting because a few weeks ago at the restaurant, I did a French special. I did a coq au vin, which is a very famous chicken stew from France. Mm-hmm. And, if you just wanted to call it a chicken tagine, you could, because it literally had the exact same idea, components of creating this deep, rich flavors of chicken and vegetables. And I did not use some of the ingredients which would be traditionally used because I only cook halal food. So I substituted the wine and I substituted the ham, but ultimately, you know, we got to the flavors and the textures that a coq au vin is. But to me, it was so similar. So in the same way that England was so influenced by Indian cuisine, and, you know, curry, again, is a word that comes from Great Britain more than even India. I would imagine that the French, having spent so much time in Morocco, it's only natural that there'd be some influence on each other's cuisines and lives and foods and all that stuff, cultures.
Well, tell us when you're going to have that back on the menu, because that's one of my favorites.
Oh, okay. Just what I'll think about it, but watch us on Facebook.
All right. Well, Kent, thanks a lot for the call. Anisa Waheed is our guest here, and we only have a minute or so. We may grab one more call here, but how do people find you on Facebook?
It's Tara Kitchen. Just look for Tara Kitchen, and we have Tara Kitchen Schenectady, Troy, Gilderland. So you want to, if you want to follow what I'm doing, and that's the Tara Kitchen main page in Schenectady.
All right, we have a minute and a half here. Why don't you give us a sneak peek of a new menu item that's coming up in the next month or two?
Recently we were talking in the restaurant about probably going south of the border.
Ooh.
So we might be looking at some Mexican food, some Peruvian food, and I'm really excited to be doing all that stuff because one part of the world that I've not traveled is South America. I've actually never been to South America, And it's interesting because the last time we were thinking about going, there was this whole thing with Zika, and now it's COVID. So I don't know when I'll make it there, but I think maybe we'll travel there with food in the next couple of weeks.
Do you have to go to the place where you're, you know, you can look on the internet, right, to find the food information?
Of course, but, you know, I'm just saying, like, in order to like experience those cultures, the food, and be there, you know, I think not just from the perspective of food, I mean, just from the perspective that I love to travel and learn about the world. But yeah, definitely that's what we'll do. You know, I'm going to do some research and find some recipes and ideas that we can kind of recreate here in Schenectady.
Well, Anisa Waheed, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being here. I know it's tough to squeeze in with your TV schedule, but it was great to have you here on the radio with us once again. And best to your...
Thank you so much, Ray.
Best to your family, and hopefully next time you're here, you will be here in the studio.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
We'll see you. Support comes from Honest Weight Food Co-op, local and organic food and products with a focus on sustainability. Open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily. All are welcome. Albany's homegrown grocery store, honestweight.com. Pioneer Valley Food Tours, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering food tours and more, highlighting local food producers and their seasonal specialties, pioneervalleyfoodtours.com. And Whitney's Farm Market on Country Gardens, Cheshire, featuring you-picked blueberries from their fields with safety precautions plus fresh seasonal vegetables and now picking their sweet corn, whitneysfarm.com. Once again, thanks to the great Anisa Waheed of Tara Kitchen for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls and the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Charlene Knight took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. We return Monday at 2. It's Medical Monday, don't you know? Cardiology with Dr. Robert Fang. Meantime, have a splendid weekend. Stand by now for the best of our knowledge.